Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Joseph G. with the good news of 12-Step Recovery, Rum Radio, and rumradio.org. Well, I'd like to acknowledge the WNAH, the AM broadcasting radio station out of Nashville, Tennessee. They're out on Music Row. Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse provide us with this hour-long public service time for their clients and their customers to give out to the community in a positive way. They believe that the 12-step process is a answer to a lot of problems that beset the communities, not particularly in just Nashville, but we also have surrounding Arkansas, Tennessee, and Kentucky, areas that the radio station goes out to. And so welcome. Also, recoverytoday.net magazine and recoverytoday.net internet recovery information. They put one of our articles in there, and it's Spiritus Contra Spiritum. It's the title of the letter that Dr. Carl Jung had sent to Bill Wilson, one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous early on, and it's Spirit in the Ravages of Spirit. Excellent letter, and I wrote to that letter with some understandings on a spiritual vein, and I think you folks would like it. I'd like to also acknowledge and introduce Harold B., who's our co-host tonight. Harold B. is in the Family Intervention Program. He goes out to troubled families of all over the county area, helping families try to put their lives back together. I believe this is a great work. As the family goes, so it's the basic unit of society, so does the society go. The breakdown of the family is probably, if you tracked it out, would probably be the main cause of all the social ills, or most of the social ills we have today. So thank you so much, Harold, for the work you do. Harold?
You are welcome. Thank you for having me on the program, and it's an honor to be here. I believe that drinking is a search for God at the wrong address. And so it's nice to be here, talk about the solution, and especially talk about working with one another as the number one tool to help. I believe in bringing a little fun to life, so I've got a sound effect for that. There we go. So it's nice to be here, and it's nice to just bring to light some of the things that were so carefully put together back in the 30s and 40s. And I really appreciate Joseph for his work on the website, rumradio.org, and on this radio broadcast. He doesn't make a penny from this. In fact, we were just talking about how much money he's sunk into it. There's no remuneration except for the satisfaction of knowing that we are able to go back to our roots and be effective living in the solution, and it makes a big difference in society. So thank you, Joseph.
Well, thank you, Harold. I like to think that this work is going to be something like a St. Patrick. You know, St. Patrick, fame found St. Patrick soon after he died. So right after I died, I think people will really recognize how much work went into this. Not until.
There you go.
But that's okay. Tonight we're going to be discussing, I have it on the website, it's Thrice, Tradition 3. The traditions are the glue, if not the whip, that hold the AA groups from falling into the ditch. These are the rules, regulations, or agreements we don't really have any laws, but we do have understandings that have been developed over years to keep our groups from exploding. You got to remember, an AA group is a collection of anarchists who are unruly by nature. So we don't have anybody in charge of us other than God. God through an informed group conscience, which is the personality of the particular group. Each group is autonomous, except affecting AA or another group. AA as a whole or another group. So these are some of the understandings that have developed over the years. We're doing the whole set. Last week was tradition two, and this is tradition three, which states the only requirement for an AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. And the long form, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Nor ought AA membership to ever depend on money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. Without a sense of urgency, desire loses its value, Jim Rohn. A desire purposes the possibility of action to achieve it. Action presupposes a goal which is worth achieving. Ayn Rand. This tradition packed with meaning. For AA, it's really saying to every serious drinker, you are an AA member if you say so. Let me repeat that. You are an AA member if you say so. You can declare yourself in. Nobody can keep you out. No matter who you are, no matter how long you've been gone, no matter how grave your emotional complications, even your crimes, we still can't deny you AA. We don't want to keep you out. We aren't a bit afraid you'll harm us. Never mind how twisted or violent you may be. We just want to be sure that you get the same great chance for sobriety that we had. So you're an AA member the minute you declare it. Harold?
And it says you cannot be denied no matter who you are and no matter who they are. In my past experience, there have been people involved with AA who are self-acclaimed experts or maybe even consider themselves some sort of government in AA, and that's a bunch of hooey because there are no such people. There is no board that can meet and decide that you're out, and that's so important to the organization. I've been part of universities and university teams. And my focus at the university was the focus of running group therapy, studying different groups and trying to figure out why some groups are effective when others are not. And the subject of many studies has been AA and why it's so effective. It's four times as effective as anything else that universities or teachers or anyone's been able to come up with, and they've been studying for decades trying to figure out why it works so well. And I think that this feature is really key. What I see is that the need to expel certain members from a group is really fueled by the fact that we're such a litigious society, and therapists are often quite worried about who could file suit and damage their careers and reputation, so they needed to reserve the right to refuse membership to certain people for various reasons. But AA has none of that. They don't have worries. And But certain people just take it upon themselves to try to do things which would expel a certain person for various reasons. And so I just want to say, with all the study and trying to figure out what makes AA great, I think someday they'll realize you're a member if you say you are. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Let me give you the call-in number in case you'd like to join in the conversation. It's 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. I have this now. Where are you? I also beat my wife and skewer innocent babies while in my cups. It's Mr. Dawkins from Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. You're welcome here. A seat right next to Lizzie Borden has just opened up. And as a word of caution, we have a defrocked priest and some fresh from the asylum. And we even let in lawyers. It stretches our tolerance, but they too are also welcome here, I do declare. To establish this principle of membership took years of harrowing experience. In our early time, nothing seemed so fragile, so easily breakable as an AA group. Hardly an alcoholic we approached paid any attention. Most of those who did join us were like flickering candles in a windstorm. Time after time, their uncertain flames blew out and couldn't be relighted. Our unspoken constant thought was, which one of us would be next? And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never knowing who to cling to when the rain set in. The member gives us a vivid glimpse of those days. At one time, he says, every AA group had many membership rules. Everybody was scared, witless, that something or somebody would capsize the boat and dump us all back into the drink. Our foundation office asked each group to send in its list of protective regulations. The total list was a mile long. If all those rules had been in effect everywhere, nobody could have possibly joined AA at all. So great was the sum of our anxiety and fear. We had considered calling the groups Paranoids Anonymous, but the problem was nobody would tell you where they were holding the meetings. We were resolved to admit nobody to AA but the hypothetical class of people termed pure alcoholics, except for the guzzling and the unfortunate results thereof. They could have no other complications, so beggars, tramps, asylum inmates, prisoners, queers, plain crackpots, and fallen women were definitely out. Yes, sir, we cater only to pure, respectable alcoholics. Any other would surely destroy us. Besides, if we took in those odd ones, what would decent people say about us? We built a fine mesh fence around the AA. Only the elite, as any alcoholic woman, was considered fallen and beyond redemption. Did you know that, Harold?
Let's continue with that.
Okay. The real alcoholic would be permitted. Otherwise, just any rabble could taint our good name. And to what havoc employ? If the floodgates were open to the flotsam and jetsam of society's castaway, we would be saddled by a jaundiced judgment of assassination by association. The town drunks were now in fear of their reputations. What would people think? Maybe this sounds comical now. Maybe you think we old-timers were pretty intolerant, but I can tell you there was nothing funny about the situation then. We were grim. Because we felt our lives and homes were threatened, and was no lasting manner. Intolerant, you say. Well, we were frightened. Naturally, we began to act like most everybody does when afraid. After all, isn't fear the true basis of intolerance? Yes, we were intolerant. Anger is fear in action. is intolerance is acceptance at rest.
Yes.
As no roads are so rough as those have just been mended, so no sinners are so intolerant as those have just turned saints. Charles Caleb Colton. Isn't that a great saying?
That is a great saying. That's really,
As no roads are so rough as those have just been mended, so no sinners are so intolerant as those have just turned saints.
And we've got to remember that in the early days, the meetings started as they splintered off from the Oxford group, and they had a bunch of rules and requirements for membership there. So it was such a breath of fresh air for Dr. Bob and Bill W. to set it up so that anyone and everyone could come. And the spirit of it, I just love the spirit of it. And the fact that working intense work with another alcoholic was the key to staying sober. You were going to need other alcoholics to work with. And every time I work with somebody that's new in the program, it reminds me of what things were like or what things could have been like if I hadn't found the lifeboat from the Titanic that I was living. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. I think it's good to remember that initially when AA started, it's really the beginning of AA, was splintering off from the Oxford group, and they took that deep breath and moved on their own. Most of what Oxford group looked like was saddled in with AA. If you notice locally, most groups mirror the groups in the vicinity. So the way they handle meetings and the way they give out milestone chips and the way their basic formats are like a rubber stamp in the local understanding. This is what they know, and that's what happened with AA in the beginning. They really mirrored a lot of the Oxford group understandings. And the Oxford group was a men's Christian fellowship. If you look at one of the traditions, it says they were surprised, or I think it's in the big book, they were surprised that even women would respond as well as men did. Wow, what a surprise, huh? They were surprised.
Yeah, yeah.
Because initially, women were not allowed. Blacks were not allowed. Jews were not allowed. Catholics were not allowed. This was a Christian men's deal. And then, of course, the change came from, this is the harrowing experiences that we're going to get into, that came to this understanding. It's one of the reasons the Oxford group didn't make it. They were too, what's the word, sequestered. They too closed. They were very closed-minded. And then, of course,
dogmatic.
Thank you. And then AA started with its growing pains. There was two clubs, and it was interesting at the two clubs. Different situations happened. One was with an atheist, and one was with a drug addict at the same time, and they both realized that it didn't matter because they found that these people turned out to be solid AAs. Whether they were drug addicts or they didn't believe in God, they had something to share with the group and they could help other people and help themselves get sober. That's our goal. That's our only goal. We have nothing else. That's all we do. That's our primary purpose, is to stay sober and help the other alcoholic, period. We have no other affiliation, no other purpose. We're a group of alcoholics in action. That's it. How could we then guess that all these fears were so proved groundless? How could we know that thousands of these sometimes fighting people were to make astonishing recoveries and become our greatest workers and intimate friends? Was it credible that AA was to have a divorce rate far lower than average? Could we then foresee that troublesome people were to become our principal teachers of patience and tolerance? Could any of them imagine a society which would include every conceivable kind of character and cut across every barrier of race, creed, politics, and language with ease. Beer can be headier than whiskey once a man has acquired a taste for it. Donald Downies.
That's
We were more often frightened and hurt, and we suffer more from imagination than from reality. Marcus Aeneas Seneca. You like that one? I'll repeat that one again. We are more often frightened than hurt, and we suffer more from imagination than from reality. Marcus Seneca. The door swung open, and we were both pleased and amazed. We would become a society like had never been seen before, all accepting, all tolerating. You were invited to learn, to grow, and the only requirement was a desire to stop drinking. Or if you think you have a problem with alcohol, come join us in the Fellowship of the Spirit. It was the original glass house where no one could afford to cast the first stone. Why did AA finally drop all its membership regulations? Why did we leave it to each newcomer to decide himself whether he was an alcoholic and whether he should join us? Why did we dare to say, contrary to the experience of society and government everywhere, that would neither punish nor deprive any AA of a membership, that we must never compel anyone to pay anything, believe anything, or conform to anything? We are an unruly lot, and lots of rules would have no effect and drive some insane, as we would live in search for the exception anyway. We forego the plague of rigid convention, and all in all, we have found that we can only pose an informed, well-meaning suggestion, while an individual's choice remains the cornerstone of prevention. Harold?
Yeah, this is terrific. It's like time travel. Let's continue.
Okay, sure. Well, this was kind of scary for me to try to write to the traditions, because they're very simple in their application. So I think what I did is I wrote to the application, if you notice, and I wrote as the tradition is laid out, and then I would write to the thought. I would highlight the thought and then write to the thought to amplify what it's saying.
Yes.
The answer now seen in tradition three was simplicity itself. At last, experience taught us that to take away any alcoholic's full chance, we sometimes to pronounce his death sentence, and often to condemn him to endless misery. Who dared to be judge, jury, and executioner of his own sick brother? Hey,
that really sums up the entire concept, and I think captures the spirit of AA. To turn anyone away is basically to deliver a death sentence. And it's amazing to me to think about what's happening in the rooms of AA these days. Some of the things that I've heard are chilling. And this is a life and death struggle. I think we cannot forget about that. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. I agree. Hey, who made you Judge Judy and executioner? Homer Simpson. Judge Judy.
Homer Simpson.
Yeah. I got some of the good ones in here. I'll be judge, I'll be jury, said cunning old Fury. I'll try the whole cause and condemn you to death. The Mouse's Tale, Lewis Carroll. As group after group saw the possibilities, they finally abandoned all membership regulations. One dramatic experience after another clinched the determination until it became our universal tradition. Here are two examples. It was the time before Dimes. Anna Domino, 1937, AA02. Second year. On the AA calendar, it was the year two. In the time, nothing could be seen but two struggling nameless groups of alcoholics trying to hold their face up to the light. A newcomer appeared at one of these groups, knocked on the door, and asked to be let in. He talked frankly with the group's oldest member. He soon proved that he was a desperate case and that, above all, he wanted to get well. But, he asked, will you let me join your group since I'm the victim of another addiction, even worse, stigmatized than alcoholism? You may not want me among you, or will you? Ooh, sounds like drugs. I was approached by someone with 8 years of continuous sobriety, as well as a regular sponsor. He inquired of me if I would be his sponsor. I assumed that he wanted a change of pace and a fresh look at the steps from another perspective. I questioned him to his motives, goals, and intent. After wrestling, wrangling, and relying on the coke used by dentists to extract the decaying tooth by the root, he was embarrassed to a blush to openly admit a pornography addiction. He was willing to admit to drug and alcohol abuse to open forum, but to whisper pornography in private with a prospective sponsor, his shame of ridicule was more than he could bear. Once the particular spiritual malady is addressed, I found the 12 steps to be a spiritual panacea for most, if not all, that ails you. Harold?
That is so important. And these days, with the electronics the way they are, pornography addiction is just as rampant. And with the university studying what is happening in the brain with that, and they're concluding that viewing pornography has an effect on the brain damage that is much like cocaine, where this is a very timely subject and I think important one. Maybe later we can have a program where we discuss all the intricacies of the brain damage and physical damage that various addictions create, and the destroyed relationships. But again, this is exactly what I like about the 12 steps, is because it really doesn't matter which substance or which addiction a person is suffering with, the 12 steps are the solution. The solution is the same, even though the problems may vary quite a bit. The solution is the same, working the steps with a sponsor. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. There was the dilemma. What should the group do? The oldest member summoned two others and in confidence laid the explosive facts in their laps. I said, well, what about it? If we turn this man away, he'll soon die. If we allow him in, only God knows what trouble he'll brew. What shall the answer be, yes or no? Give us your beaten down, your broken, and your addicts longing to be free, clean and sober. Okay, we'll settle for a reasonable facsimile. At first, the elders could look only at the objections. We deal, they said, with alcohol only. Should we sacrifice this one for the sake of the many? So went the discussion, whilst the newcomer, fate hung in the balance. Then one of the three spoke in a very different voice. What are we really afraid of, he said. Is it our reputation? We are much more afraid of what people might say than the trouble this strange alcoholic might bring. And we've been talking, five short words have been running through my mind. Something keeps repeating to me. What would the master do? Referring to Jesus. Not another word was said. What more indeed could be said? A reputation.
Wow. I love this part.
What would the master say?
Yes.
That pretty well sums it up. A reputation once broken may possibly be repaired, but the world will always keep their eye on the spot where the crank, where the crack once stood, even though no wider than a hair. Overjoyed, the newcomer plunged into 12-step work. Tirelessly, he laid AA's message before scores of people. Since this was a very early group, those scores have since multiplied themselves into thousands. Never did he trouble anyone with his other difficulty. AA had taken its first step in the formation of Tradition 3. Make your life a mission, not an intermission. Not long after the man with the double stigma knocked for admission, AA's other group received its membership a salesman we call Ed, a power driver. This one, and brash as any salesman could possibly be, he had at least an idea in a minute on how to improve AA. These ideas he sold to fellow membership with the same burning enthusiasm which he distributed automobile polish. But he had one idea that wasn't so saleable. Ed was an atheist. His pet obsession was that AA could get along without its God nonsense. He browbeat everybody, and everybody expected he'd soon get drunk. For at the time, you see, AA was on the pious side. There must be a heavy penalty, it was thought, for blasphemy. Distressingly enough, Ed proceeded to stay sober. A mediocre idea that generates enthusiasm will go farther than a great idea that inspires no one. Mary Kay Ash. A man without God is not a man, but only an image of a man. David E. Some of the best Christians I ever met were atheists. At length, the time came for him to speak in a meeting. We shivered, for we knew what was coming. He paid a fine tribute to the fellowship. He told how his family had been reunited. He extolled the virtue of honesty. He recalled the joys of 12-step work. And then he lowered the boom, cried Ed. I can't stand this God stuff. It's a lot of malarkey for weak folks. This group doesn't need it, and I won't have it. Now, hell with it. People are in distress, and religion provides solace. Just as people who are physically injured receive relief from opiate-based drugs. Religion is a set of ideas, and ideas are expressions of material realities. Religion is a symptom of a disease, not the disease itself. Karl Marx. Religion was for the people who didn't want to go to hell. Spirituality was the people who had already been there.
Maybe I think that's the point. Yes.
What, the religion and the spirituality?
Yeah, spirituality is for people who've been there.
Did you like the Karl Marx quote?
Well, he was a very sick person, and that was his way of calling for help.
Well, I know. It was interesting. A lot of people said that the deal was religion is not a symptom of a disease, not the disease itself. Religion is a symptom of a disease. Have you ever heard that before?
Well, yes, and... The whole premise is sick and twisted. It's the ruminations of a murderer. That's how murderers have to, in order to validate the horrifying decisions that they've made.
Now, are you thinking of Joe Stalin? Karl Marx was a economist. He was an economist.
Oh.
Karl Marx wrote the book *Das Kapital*, *The Capitalist*.
Yeah, he was
out of that
a
book, and that was the communist. It was the Communist Manifesto.
But it's the driving behind.
It was the intellectual force behind the. It was the idea. Religion was okay. Maybe the atheist cannot find God for the same reason a thief cannot find a policeman. You know why? They're not looking.
There you go.
Some of us had the belief in God that we had developed as children and never changed. Still others mouthed the words, not giving much thought whether we believed them or not. Some had no concept of God at all. For all intents and purposes, they were the God of their own understanding, if they could only manage well. Step three asks us to examine at the deepest and at the most profound level what our concept of God, or even no God, really was. Step three asks us to examine our concept of God to work with it. We can change it if we find it necessary and desirable. A great wave of outrage and resentment engulfed the meeting, sweeping every member to a single resolve. Out he goes. Off with their heads, off with their heads. The Red Queen. The elders let Ed outside. They said firmly, "You can't talk like this around here. You'll have to quit or get out." With great sarcasm, Ed came back at them. "Now tell me this." So, he reached over to a bookshelf and took out a sheaf of paper. On top of them lay the foreword to the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Then, under preparation, he read aloud, "The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking." Relentlessly, Ed went on, "When you guys were writing that sentence, did you mean it or didn't you?" Tradition one. Surely there's none which more jealously guards the individual's right to think, talk, and act as he wishes. No AA can compel another to do anything. Nobody can be punished or expelled. Dismayed, the elders looked at one another, but they knew he had them cold.
Yeah.
Ed, yeah, you got us. He got us. We were hung by our own petard. Harold?
This is terrific, and I don't know if we'll have any time to talk about the local groups and some of their ideas and their little fantasies, but it's so important. In my own example, let me speak of my experience for a while. At first, the idea of God and the idea of the Bible from some of the things my mother had taught me in error. She's passed away now, but bless her heart, she did the best she knew. But at that time, I was brought up under the Muhammad Ali approach. I am the greatest. I can do anything I set my mind to. And that really, that self-reliance runs contrary to the spirit of AA and the 12 steps. And so I had a rough time with God and a rough time with religion when I arrived. And you guys accepted me and loved me. You loved me until I could love myself. You tolerated all my ideas and my disdain. My first sponsor, I remember, said, "Well, contempt prior to investigation ain't such a hot idea." And he said, "Have you even read the Bible?" And I said, "Well, I've read parts of it." But that, so I decided to read the Bible before I criticized it. And that's led to about 15 years of really amazing discoveries. Because if you really give the Bible a chance, if you read it the way it's supposed to be read, flipping back and forth between Old and New Testaments, letting the Bible explain itself, and understanding of some of the nuances in word meanings between Greek and English and Hebrew, it's really a thrilling, exciting experience for the Bible to come alive right before my eyes. So that's where I am now. When I first came into the meetings, I really had no use for it, and I was a lot like Ed in the story. And but you guys just accepted me. You said, "Okay, what you need is a power greater than yourself." And I realized, well, alcohol is a power greater than me, and my first wife, and the group itself. So I chose the group itself for as my first higher power, and I still believe that. And so my motto became "Make no decision alone," and that's how my program started out. The tolerance, the acceptance, loving me till I could love myself was really the key, and I owe my life to that. So this tradition is so important, and anyone that thinks otherwise is truly uninformed, uneducated, and must be closed-minded. Maybe they're in self-reliance of their own. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. So Ed and Harold stayed. Ed
yes.
not only stayed, he stayed sober month after month. The longer
so did
he
Harold.
Kept dry, pardon me? And so did Harold, that's right.
So did Harold,
Harold
yeah.
And Harold and Ed stayed, and Ed and Harold stayed sober month after month, and then Harold year after year. The longer he kept dry, the louder he talked against God. The group was in anguish so deep that all fraternal charity had vanished. When, wrote members to one another, will this guy get drunk? When you've got an elephant by the hind leg and he's trying to run away, it's best to let him run. Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, my goodness.
If you can't help them up, then help them down. Have you ever heard that? My first podcast.
No, that's new to me. Say some more about that.
If you can't help them up, then you help them down. In other words, I'll tell somebody if he doesn't look like he's coming around. I'll say, you're wasting your time. You're not going to get it. You don't have what it takes to get it. Or if you offer somebody, look, you need a month. You need money for a drink. You're not gonna, here, go drink. Just say you ain't gonna go. You're not gonna make it here.
Yes, and often I've found it necessary to tell people, look, the only way to really tell on this thing is to try to do some controlled drinking. So go ahead and try to do some controlled drinking. And talk to me later.
Most of the time, when I pick up a sponsee, Harold, is that. I ask them, have you had enough? So I never go for the, because they've already told me they've had enough, so I'm not going to offer them to go drink. I never offer an alcoholic to go drink, but I would tell somebody to help them down. They need to hit bottom. They haven't hit bottom yet. How can I help them facilitate that bottom? Because until they hit bottom, wherever that might be, they might be trying to intellectualize the steps, or they really don't believe it's going to work, or they're not putting in the necessary work to get it accomplished. So although most of the time I just tell them, I'm not the sponsor for you. You need to go get somebody else. Or I don't ever fire a sponsee. What I do is I let them fire themselves. And I'll only put as much energy into them as they put into themselves. I'll match them, but I'm not going to do more than that.
I've been around 4 years, and my first sponsor was about 6'5", 295, and there were some young guys who came in that really weren't convinced. They weren't. They thought maybe they should be there, and they had loved ones telling them that they were alcoholic, but they weren't convinced. And so I heard my sponsor tell more than one guy to go ahead and do some controlled drinking and get back to me later. And sometimes that's the only thing that's really going to prove to a person that they cannot predict what the outcome will be once they begin drinking. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Quite a while later, Ed got a sales job, which took him out of town. Yay! At the end of a few days, the news came in. He'd sent the telegram for money, and everybody knew what that meant. Then he got on the phone. In those days, we'd go anywhere on a 12-step job. no matter how uncompromising. But these times nobody stirred. They would have hopped in the car and crossed states to go help this guy on a 12-step book. You know that, Harold? They would do miraculous stuff to go help the next alcoholic. They went to the hospitals. They dragged these guys out of Skid Row, put them in their homes. They'd have to use plastic. Well, they didn't have plastic baggies. They'd have to get them new sets of clothes and burn the old clothes, and fumigate the bathtub once they finished up. I mean, these guys smelled of the street, vomit, dried urine, and sweat. Then you invite this guy into your house, and there's your wife going, "What are you, crazy? What if he's going to cut our throats while we're sleeping in the middle of the night?" They would still bring him in. They'd bring him in, and that's where the word sponsor comes from. That's how sponsorship started at the hospital. You'd bring him into your home and get him ready to go to the meeting after they did the surrender. But those days, we don't do that as much. We don't do the 12-step calls as much as we did, or not in my experience, not in these vicinities. I don't know why. People say because people are coming in now under their own steam, so there's not as much call. But I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. There's more alcoholism now than there's ever been before, and more of a need for 12-step calls. But we just don't go there. That I've seen.
I've noticed that in many of the 12-step communities in the states in which I've lived, it seems that there are way fewer 12-step calls. I haven't had a chance to catch you up on the last couple of weeks in my life, but my counseling work, I work with groups, and the groups that I've been working with the last couple of weeks are the extremely poor, impoverished folks that also have mental illness, and we've had a bug problem. Some of the places, some of the clients came in with bed bugs, and so they've been de-lousing the place and working with bed bugs, and so it's still around. It's just in isolated little pockets. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Quite a while later, okay, we got that. Leave him alone. Let him try it by himself for once. Maybe he'll learn a lesson. When you're out of reach, the lesson to learn is the only God can teach. When you're out of reach, the lesson to learn is the one that only God can teach. You're by yourself now. So God's going to teach you. About 2 weeks later, Ed stole by night into an AA member's house and, unknown to the family, went to bed. They were a very close community. Kid almost hears that. "Honey, is that you? Oh, it's you, Ed." Daylight found the master of the house and another friend drinking their morning coffee. A noise was heard on the stairs. To their consternation, Ed appeared. A quizzical smile on his lips, he said, "Have you fellows had your morning meditation?" They quickly sensed that he was quite in earnest. In fragments, the story came out. Interesting, all of a sudden, meditation. Then a prayer and meditation. Not Ed. What's going on here? This guy have a spiritual experience? What's going on? He will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at the jumping off point. And in that pain and in that moment, the staff of life hidden in the cheap motel dresser drawer came forth in the form of Gideon's Bible. In a neighboring state, Ed had holed up in a cheap motel after all his pleas for help had been rebuffed. Those words rang out in his fevered mind. "They had deserted me. I have been deserted by my own kind. This is the end. Nothing is left." Jumping off point? As he tossed on his bed, his hand brushed the bureau nearby, touching a book. Opening the book, he read. It was Gideon's Bible. had never confided any more of what he saw and felt in that hotel room. It was the year 1938. He hadn't had a drink since. It takes what it takes. As God hand made sure that the door stayed open and wide and none of his suffering offspring would be denied, he remains much too large to be insulted by the fever-pitched ranting of his infirm children. Harold?
That's wonderful. I was reading some information about people and their problems and their belief in God, and it really comes down to the fact that if you're worried, if you're under a lot of stress, your God is too small. One of the statements that's recently been going around the internet is the idea that if you're in a tough situation and you're worried and you're stressed out about things, it's because your concept of God is too small. Instead of telling God how big your problems are, tell your problems how big your God is.
Oh, very good. I heard it this way. The longer your worry list, the smaller your God.
There you go.
Nowadays, when old-timers who know Ed gather, they exclaim, what if we had actually succeeded in throwing Ed out for blasphemy? What would have happened to him and all the others he later helped?
That's a really important concept of this evening's topic. We're not only throwing out one individual, but we're throwing out everyone that person would help and that the people that their people would help, on and on and on. You know, I was reading about the Civil War, the United States Civil War, and So many people died, and along with them, all the children that they would have had and all the good that those children would have done and the children's children and so forth and so on. That's the real tragedy. And it's very poignantly told in this story about Ed. What about all the people that he helped and the people that they would help? Joseph?
Thank you. So the hand of providence early gave us a sign that any alcoholic is a member of society, of our society, when he says so. Count me in, for I surrender to win, and there is no if, and, or buts about it. We have a few minutes we can discuss, if you'd like, some of the group understandings with this. I think it's interesting to look at that there was two AA groups at this time. That was it. Two groups. One group had the problem with accepting other people to come in. It's a natural consequence of AA thinking we might have been the town drunk in a city of millions. And now we're afraid somebody might know that we're in recovery.
Yeah,
that's the reason why they didn't. Yeah, go ahead.
That's the amazing thing about this. I've talked to many people over the two decades who all of a sudden get very worried of what people think of them, and they might be embarrassed if anyone sees them coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But they didn't give one moment's thought to what people were going to think of the fools that they made of themselves in the bars and the huge embarrassment of driving off the road into the ditch and crapping their pants in the process. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Yeah, so now we come into that. So now part of the reason why we were exclusive at the time, or the old timers were exclusive at the time, was the anonymity portion of it. What havoc would these people run with the addicts? This recently happened, matter of fact, at our home group, Lamplighters in Missouri City. A drug addict came in, and they discussed it in the meeting. I believe it was a discussion meeting about that. You know, he was an addict, and one of the fellas, Doug. You know, Doug, right?
Yes.
He turned around and he said, "Well, you know, if alcohol is not your problem, and it's really, you know, narcotics, you know, there's places for you to go, and you might consider that." He tried to couch it as politely as he could. And it really started a ruckus. And from what I understand, it also happened at Post Oak almost at the same time. Somebody else did the same thing, trying to let them know that having a drug addiction, they're really not welcome here, no matter how nice you try to couch it. And so when I got to share, I brought this stuff up. I says, first of all, the requirement is a desire to stop drinking. We're not even asking you to stop drinking, only to create a desire. Huh?
Yes.
The other part of it, I think in the big book, says if you think you might have a problem with alcohol. That's pretty broad.
Yes.
You think you might have a problem. Two, and this is the tradition that says if you say you're a member, you're a member. Now, we've gone over this. Why would a guy come up and say this after all these years? And the guy's got 8 years of sobriety. Doesn't he know what's going on? And he was upset that he was challenged, you know, and I belayed it and said, no, you're more than welcome here. Now, if there's a question, you could always go to them individually and introduce them to NA or CA or whatever the deal is and say,
yeah, in a private conversation, yes.
Yeah, I think that discussion should be privately, and you could just give the person information. To me, there's really very little difference between the two. I think it's only step one. They have a little different literature, but it's all based on the big book literature anyway. If you work the steps, you can come to the only difference between one addiction and another addiction is the specific chemical or behavior. And that's only in step one. It addresses the problem. The rest of the 11 steps are a solution, and we call that a design for living. So, you know, that's 1/12 of the program is the problem. So you really need to tell somebody, well, you know, the way you get your drug. No, okay, so he'd have to go to a dealer to get his drugs, right? So that's the difference where we could go to a liquor store and buy liquor. But how many alcoholics have never tried any other drugs? I can't hardly believe that. One. Two, so you would classify alcohol during the prohibition, right, as a drug, all right, as an illegal drug. You had to go through the same contortions during prohibition as the druggie goes through the contortions to get his illegal drugs, yeah?
Yes.
So I see hardly any difference at all. I think it's just a matter of semantics to me. If you work an honest 12-step program, I see no problem. Well, we made it to the hour. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're gonna, you know, take a listen to the archive, take a look at the Rum Radio site. We're always glad to help anyone. If you want to call, you could contact us through the website. In the meantime, thank you, Harold, for your time.
You're welcome.
And I would tell you this, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org.